Okay, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning Torah study, and we are very pleased to have you with us. We have a full house this morning, so I'm very appreciative for people coming out, and also for all of those of you who are listening in from wherever you are, all over the world, Sabbath greeting to you. It is a lovely day, and it's an appointed time. The Shabbat is a time where we should stop whatever else it is that we do and dedicate this time. It's a sanctuary in time. I like to tell people the Sabbath is the very first thing in Scripture that God calls holy. And the older I get, the more I realize that time is the most sacred thing of all, right? I absolutely love time off to do what it is that I love to do, and I'm very thankful that God has made a way for me to do that. So I did want to mention this morning, last week I brought up a friend of mine. I've only met her through Facebook, but we've talked on the telephone. Her name is Amy Johnson. Her husband, Cam, had a brain bleed and went into emergency surgery they're still having a lot of difficulty. So I would ask that everyone please lift up that family, lift up obviously Cam, but also the family. As you know, any of you have had to deal with someone who is in the hospital or going through a trying time. People don't rest, they're extremely exhausted, and they're worried. So we have to believe that God can heal, and so I would ask that you lift up Cam this morning. I know that there are plenty of other prayer needs, so if you're online, please post those comments if you want someone to pray. And we don't need a lot of details because we won't be doing anything anyway other than lifting those names up. So just leave a name or whatever it is you'd like to share, and I'm sure that many of the people here will be happy to pray with you in those situations. It's been a busy week. All my weeks are busy now, but they're busy doing fun things. So we did a new show. I was on Rod Bryant's show this week on Beyond the Matrix. Then I did a new show with Jono Vandoor, my crazy Australian friend. So you just have to bear with him. He's a good friend of mine. You know how you have friends that are a little bit off? So anyway, no, actually, I love Jono. Anyway. Right, Dave? Dave's shaking his head like, I know what it's like to have a friend that's off. He's talking about me, I think. All right, so it is Shabbat, and we are currently going through the triennial Torah portions. That is the division of Torah readings whereby one will work through the entirety of the Torah in a mere 3.5 years. So I love this cycle of readings because in my estimation, and based on my studies, it is the earliest. So the annual cycle of readings, which is a wonderful cycle of readings as well, came from the Jewish dispersion in Babylon. And even in the Talmud, it mentions that according to the land of Israel in the time, they worked through the Torah according to the triennial cycle of readings. So going back to that cycle is not just a way to recover that ancient, authentic feel, but it gives us more time to dig deep and really get into the text. We can look at a smaller section. So the annual cycle of readings, you might go through 5, sometimes 6 chapters, and it's hard to work through that much material. What I found myself doing In the 10 years or so that I worked through year after year after year, the annual cycle of readings, I got real picky and choosy. What does that mean? I would focus on certain things that I like to talk about and things that were uncomfortable, just skip over them. I didn't tell anybody I was doing that, but it got to be obvious after about a decade, right? I wonder why he never talks about this particular thing. So this will force me to work through that unless I change my mind and bail off of it like I've done in the past, right, Dave? So, but we are in the patriarchal narratives. We are working through those stories about the patriarchs, about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Well, something hit me last night that really comes to bear in this class. We focus on the men. And part of that is because the Bible focuses on the men. But directly below the surface are these incredible women. And it's something that really stood out to me in this study this week. The Hebrew Bible does a good job, even though people don't notice it, of championing these women who are actually some of the heroes of our stories. Like I said, the men get all the credit. They're like the quarterback on the football team. Everyone else who's doing all the work behind the scenes generally don't get the credit. My wife would probably agree, and most women. That's the way it is in every home, right? But in this story that I'm going to talk about today, it becomes really apparent, that just below the surface, the true hero of the story is not Isaac. It's actually his wife. And I'm going to make that point. I posted some things on Facebook and got a lot of activity about it. People had some comments, but let's see if you came up with the same ideas that I did when I looked at it. So we are in the life of Isaac. But again, remember in Isaiah chapter 51, verses 1 and 2, it says, "You who chase righteousness, you who seek Jehovah, look to Abraham and to Sarah." Notice it says Sarah. Like we always say, look to Abraham and Sarah. So think about this. We're talking about not only the patriarchs, but the matriarchs in these stories. Okay. We're talking about the life of Isaac. Isaac is the seed of promise. He is the one to whom the blessing, the birthright, the covenant, everything has to go to Isaac. And we learned last week that everything would pass not through Ishmael, but through Isaac, even though Ishmael is the firstborn. There's going to be a twist in a lot of these stories. Like you read it and you think, and we all think, well, I know how the story goes, but you still have to read it because there are details you might miss. How many of you saw the movie Titanic? Was there anyone who did not know that the boat was going to sink? You know it's going to sink, right? But that's an incredible movie because it gives a backstory. How true is it? I don't know. I'm not that into the movie. But I'm just saying that there are things within the story, even if you think you know what the story is about, that if you truly look at it, you'll see some wonderful things in these particular stories. We also know that according to the narrative, according to the biblical text, God becomes known as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, not as the God of, let's say, Abraham, Ishmael, and Esau, for instance. He becomes known as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, along the way, and this is what I love about looking at these stories, is you notice things like this. At every step in the process, every step along the way, it's almost as if the plan of God is threatened. Like it almost doesn't come to pass. Like, I don't know, think about this. Sometimes it's not what you might expect. Miraculous births I brought up last week not only become part of the story, they have to be part of the story. Think about that. According to the biblical narrative, the Torah, in order to bring the people of Israel into existence, requires not one miraculous birth, but three. You have to have these. You take these miraculous births out, the story dies. It's carried along by the miracles. It's carried along by things that one might not expect. Just like I pointed out, Abraham requires a miraculous birth. Isaac requires a miraculous birth. And what we'll see in the stories in the next several weeks is that so does the birth that comes about through Jacob's wife, Rachel. All right? So you take those out, you don't have the story. Abraham's firstborn, Ishmael, will not be the heir. Newsflash. You might expect that because in the ancient culture, the firstborn receives what we call in English sometimes thinking a double portion. It actually indicates two-thirds. So it's like you would think, you got to think about it like that. A double portion is not this and this. It's twice what the other portion is, right? So it's two-thirds. But Ishmael won't get it, even though it seemingly would go that way. In fact, Ishmael is cast out. Now, when we read that story, do you feel a little sorry for Hagar and Ishmael? I mean, I do. Some people might say, no, you can't because, but really, I mean, you see, let's look at it. Let's go there first because this kind of sets the stage. If you go back just a little bit to Genesis chapter 21, and I want to read verses 10 through 11. Genesis 21, 10 through 11. So she said to Abraham, now this is after she sees Isaac presumably being mocked by the handmaid's son, by Hagar's son Ishmael. She says to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my son Isaac. Now, when you read this, just on the surface, you think, man, she's pretty hard to live with, you know? I mean, that's, and she throws this situation to Abraham. You got to throw the woman and the child out. Kick them out into the desert. Give them a skin of water and let them go. I mean, that's sort of like, that ought to make you go, ugh, I'm not sure I like that. And the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. And so he feels like I do. Abraham feels like I do. He didn't want to kick him out. But look at verse 12. But God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the lad and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you, because through Isaac shall your descendants be named. And then he gives certain promises associated with Ishmael. He'll become a great nation too. Don't worry about it. I got this. But there's something about protecting the plan. Now, here's something that I thought about last night when I was preparing the class today. Abraham wouldn't have kicked him out. He wouldn't have done it. I don't think. It took a very strong woman to step into this story and kick him out. Now, we can be critical, whatever, but something is going on here. In fact, if you go just to chapter 25, verse 1, it begins to list other women and other children that were born to Abraham through these other women. And then look at verse 5, 25, 5. Abraham gave all that he had to Isaac, but to the sons of his concubines, Abraham gave gifts. And while he was still living, he sent them away from his son Isaac eastward to the east country. He slings them all out. And I don't know that Sarah didn't say, okay, Abraham, you got another child and another woman? Out. Get them out. So that's the way that business is handled in the house of Abraham and Sarah. You can have these children, but they got to go. And so that's what happens. Here's a thought. Abraham would have, hear me on this, he would have passed the entire plan of God onto Eliezer of Damascus. He would have given the plan to the Damascan Eliezer. He said, look, I just have, I mean, you keep talking about all these seeds, I'm paraphrasing. How about, you know, all I have is a servant. He'd have been happy with that. And God said, no, that won't be your heir. It's going to be another one of your own. So then later he says he would have given it to Ishmael. Let Ishmael live in your sight. Abraham is so determined to pass the plan on that he's like going to give it to anybody. A servant, my other son. But God keeps telling him, no, I got this. And I think he's actually knowing that he's going to work it through the women. It's going to be obvious. So, once again, last week we learned that the plan is in trouble with Isaac. These men cannot pick a woman who's not barren. I believe that's for a reason. I believe that what it says to us is, this is not your plan. You can't bring this plan into fruition. You can't make it happen. It's not going to work the way you think. I'm going to have to be involved. And the world will know now and always will know that it wasn't your doing which brought this about. It's not going to work the way you thought, with whom you thought, how and when, none of that. So Isaac discovers that his woman, Rivka, is barren. And he starts to pray. And this was the focus of last week's class. He prays, if you read in chapter 25, verses 19 and following, like we did last week, you think that this is sort of immediate and quick. He says, "Dear Lord, you know my wife, she can't have a baby, please help her." Bam, she gets pregnant with twins. Not what happened. Not what happened. 20 years, Isaac prays. And we get upset when God doesn't jump when we call him. Fix my situation. Could you help me with a new set of tires? Could you, whatever. I mean, we really do. We expect God to respond like a microwave. And it doesn't always work that way. You know, a lot of times I think growing up in church, you know, I learned some basic fundamental ideas about the prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And you know all these passages. And if you pray and it doesn't happen, it's because you prayed amiss. These people are praying in line with God's plan. And it still takes 20 years, but it happens. Yay, twins. You get so excited. And I tell my kids, I'm looking forward. I have 6 kids. I want twins at some point. I just think it would be fun. And I wanted them when I was having kids. Now I want my kids to have twins. I think it'd even be more fun if they have them. You know, so I don't have to have them like 24/7, but just periodically. But Rivka has a difficult pregnancy. And during the pregnancy, we get the image that she's going through a lot of discomfort. These inside of her, it's like something is going on. And she goes to inquire of God, and God speaks to her first. Before he ever speaks to Isaac, he speaks to Rivka. And he tells her that the reason she is dealing with a difficult pregnancy is because within her womb are two nations. That they are literally crushing one another is the way the Hebrew puts it. It's not like they're just kind of poking one another. They're literally fighting. You get the image that they're fighting viciously within the womb. Now, I want to bring up a point because we tend to focus in our study of the story as these people as only representing the people, like Jacob and Esau. But I want you to recognize that because of what I just told you and what the Torah tells us, that they were talking literally about two nations. So yes, they're literally two people, but don't forget that they represent two nations. So don't get so hung up on feeling sorry or championing the cause of one or the other. They represent more than themselves in this story. Perhaps there's a lesson there that I won't get into that maybe each of us in our own way represent more than just ourselves. We do in a way. You represent your family. You represent your ancestors, your descendants. All right. So we're looking into the future when we talk about these two babies, these two infants, these two adolescents, these two men. And here's the thing that God tells Rivka. In English Bibles, it says the elder will serve the younger. In Hebrew, it's generally presented, Esau is called Hagadol, the big one. And Jacob is called the small one, the little one, the younger. So what we get is, again, contrary to what one might expect, the big one will serve the little. Now, she knows this. She gets this word straight from God, and I think that the entirety of the life, there's no doubt she loves Esau. There's no doubt that that is her baby too. But she knows that the plan of God is going to go through Jacob and not Esau. The boys are different in every way, as you know. Isaac seems to favor Esau. He says very clearly, or the text tells us, because the taste of game was in his mouth. It's a physical appetite. He connects physically with his son Esau, the hunter, the cunning hunter, the man of the field. He smells of the field. And when I think of that, I think of a good smell. You know, like it's if you walk in the woods, he's just got this manly man, earthy. Now, Jacob, not musky. We're not talking about a guy smells like he's been in the field all day. I think it's more of a pleasant outdoorsman kind of thing. And then we have Yaakov. Yaakov is favored by Rivka. Jacob is favored by Rebecca. And we don't know why. I mean, it doesn't say why. It says Jacob favors Esau because he's got the taste of game in his mouth. And it just basically says that Rivka loves Jacob. I think it's because she knows that God will select him. But another clue is given to us in that we are told very clearly that Jacob, I think in the English, most translations will say he's a quiet man living in tents. A quiet man living in tents. Sounds kind of poetic. But in Hebrew, it says he's an ishtam. A whole man, a complete man. Tam is the word, as I pointed out in the past, that indicates it's the word used for perfect, the word used for without blemish. Whenever it's talking about certain sacrifices, they're called tamim, right? It's this idea. Job is when God tells the adversary, have you considered my servant Job? He's just and upright. Tam. He's whole. He's perfect in his generation. Noah is perfect in his generation. The word there, the root word is tam. So when you read the story of Jacob, the last thing we associate with him in these early days is that boy is perfect. Because our idea, see, our idea is Greco, Roman, whatever. It's not Hebraic in the sense that the biblical narrative seeks to give it. The elder would generally get the birthright. We know this. But the birthright can't belong to Esau. It has to go to Jacob, our perfect man. Now, how does it get to Jacob? You remember the story. Jacob has to get it, but how? Esau's the oldest. It comes through a pot of soup, a mess of pottage. And Esau is willing to give that up, to give up his birthright. Now, the point that I'm going to get into in today's teaching, I need you to understand this thing. When we read birthright and we read firstborn, they're the same Hebrew word. It's not like the right of the firstborn is something different than the birthright. The birthright is the right of the firstborn. In Hebrew, it's bakar. It's the idea of getting what is due based on birth order. It's just the way it goes. It's the way it flows. You get the birthright. Now, I want to show you what I think leads me into today's class. And I'm going to be leading into today's class with a good bit. But what sets the stage, it shows the focus of the boys in my mind. What are the first recorded words of Esau, and what are the first recorded words of Jacob? I think this is instructive. Go to Genesis 25, and I just want to read verse 29 and following. Let's do Jacob, let's do Esau first. Once when Jacob was boiling pottage, Esau came in from the field. You know he's a man of the field, right? And he was famished. And Esau said to Jacob, "Let me eat some of that red pottage, for I am famished." Therefore his name was called Edom. Editorial note, right? Now, so what's his first word? Let me eat. Now, in Hebrew, the word there is swallow. He really means I want to gulp. Let me. It's almost more of a gluttonous term.
This translation says, "Let me glut."
Let me glut. Yeah, that's a better translation. What translation is that?
I don't know. Hebrew to English.
Okay, that's pretty good. Let me glut. That's what he wants to do. He's like, I just had to see my mind goes crazy. Like, I used to watch Sesame Street as a kid, and I'm thinking of Cookie Monster, you know. It's like, this is, he wants to gulp this down. He's not like saying, "Hey, could I have a little taste of that?" He feels like he's starving. He's not starving, but he says, "I'm famished. Let me gulp some of that down." Jacob has him where he wants him. Now, did he plan this? Don't know. But he seizes on the opportunity. And notice what Jacob says. "First, sell me your birthright." Now, how would you go from, give me some of that soup, I want to gulp it down. That's his focus. Jacob is like, "Well, you know I need that birthright." Now, have you ever noticed this is the very first words of each of them? And so Esau said, "I'm about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me?" Now, you can question his motives or the way he does this, but has Jacob done anything wrong? He just says, "Look, I'll give you some soup. You give me the birthright. Deal?" You know how brothers make these bad deals sometimes? And this is a bad deal for Esau. Good deal for Jacob and for the plan, I might add. So verse 33, Jacob says, "Swear to me first." So he swore to him and he sold his birthright to Jacob. That's a deal, ladies and gentlemen. That's done. We may not like it. Esau may not like it. People may criticize Jacob, call him a supplanter, call him a trickster, whatever. Hey, fair's fair. It's a deal. Jacob did give Esau, and he even threw in some bread, bread and pottage, and he ate and drank and rose and went his way. Then Esau despises his birthright. So not only does he sell it for a mess of pottage, he hates it. He doesn't say he hates Jacob. He just hates this whole thing. Now, when we pick up in today's reading, we see that like Abraham before him, Isaac would have passed the blessing on to Esau. Think about that. Just as Abraham would have passed the plan on to Eleazar or on to Ishmael, but for Sarah. All right. Sarah says, "You got to get these other ones out." Seems harsh, but she boldly steps up to ensure that the plan is not negatively affected, right? We can think she's kind of a harsh, you know, person, but hey. And look, if Rebecca is not on her toes in today's story, the plan would have gone to Esau. And it wasn't his to go to now. See, this is a point I want you to understand. It ain't his. He's not the firstborn. You go, "Well, yeah, he is." He sold that right out. So we had to go back, see, to pick that detail up, and it makes Jacob a little less guilty. Now, I'm not trying to cover for Jacob. He's a slick trickster. We know that. The Bible doesn't try to hide that. But notice all along, I'm going to cover this, why it had to happen like that. The courage of women in Scripture is a theme that sits quietly in many of our stories. This is something I brought up, and I had no idea we'd have this many women in here today, so I didn't do it to earn points. But I will tell you that it did hit me last night. I mean, you think about this. If you fast forward into the Exodus story, if it weren't for two maids, Shifra and Pua, plan gets canceled out. If it wasn't for Moses' mom saying, they're not taking my baby, I'm going to make a basket. And look, Miriam, now Miriam, come here. Miriam's life is in danger. You understand? She has to take a basket with a baby boy that they've been ordered to kill, and she's got to sneak it. And then, get this, it's not just these loyal, wonderful, beautiful Hebrew people. She slides it out. It's like she knows. And Pharaoh's daughter is there with a bunch of other women bathing, and she, oh, look, it's a baby. She notices right away it's a Hebrew. She takes it in. If it wasn't for her, plan's over. She raises him like her own son, Rahab. She takes her life in her own hands. She brings these men in, covers them up, hides them. See, all these, everybody's like, yay, Joshua, the man who conquered. Look, you have to have, if she doesn't hide them, the conquest of Jericho doesn't happen. That's the way it is. Everybody focuses on her reputation. Her reputation is stellar. She's a hero. She hides them. She's the champion of the story. Deborah. She's working with weak military men. If it's not for Deborah, Israel just gets spanked. What about Yael? She drives a stake through Sisera. You take her out, you know, Sisera's like, and again, it's his appetite. I'm just so thirsty. Let me come in. She's like, I'll give you some milk. Here you go. Go to sleep. And then, you know, right through the head. So the list goes on and on. So what I want you to understand is all these great military conquests, all these great things that are happening, it's something I really don't know. I mean, I noticed it, but I don't think I noticed it, that there is something carrying these stories along. Now, sometimes religious people will put women in a subservient role, and it's just not, and it just never really goes right when you compare the actions and the religious behaviors of these people with the biblical stories. Okay, so one final point on that as we move into this is one might come up with a saying when speaking of the success when it comes to bringing about the plan. Why send a man to do a woman's job, right? So it really becomes that integral to the story this week. And thanks to Rivka, the plan passes to the heir according to heaven's decree. Now, I want you to listen as we read the portion for today. It's a little bit long, but this in many ways, as I've told people, is really more important than any of my jabber. Because it's a principle that a lot of religious institutions have gotten out of. But there's something about reading the Torah and then talking more about it. And this is essential. So I'm going to read chapter 27, verse 1 through 28, verse 9. I've combined two ancient readings together for a very important reason, which I might discuss later. Basically, I'm going from white space to white space, which is what I've determined is what we call rightly dividing the word. Some of you may have heard that phrase. I wasn't the first to come up with it. But it indicates a sectioning off according to an ancient plan. So this is a pretty long reading. I like to begin by quoting Psalm 119:18. Gal einai va'avita niflaot mitorateka. Open my eyes, and I will look for wonderful things from your Torah. Chapter 27, verse 1. And it was that Isaac was old and his eyes were dimmed for seeing. By the way, I'm reading from the Transparent English Bible, which is very literal. So if you've not heard it yet, be ready. And his eyes were dimmed for seeing, and he called Esau, his son, the large one, and said toward him, my son. And he said toward him, look, it's me. And he said, look, please, I've become old, and I do not know the day of my death. And now lift, please, your items, your quiver, your bow, and go out to the field and hunting for me, and make for me tasty things as I love, and make it come to me, and I will eat, so that my life breath may bless you before I die. And Rivka heard the speaking of Isaac toward Esau, his son, and Esau walked to the field to hunting to make it come. And Rebekah spoke toward Jacob, her son, saying, look, I've heard your father speak toward Esau, your brother, saying, make come to me hunting and do for me tasty things that I may eat and bless you before the face of Jehovah, before the face of my death. And now, son, listen, hearken with my voice to that which I am charging you. Walk, please, toward the flock. Take for me from there two good kids of the goats, and I will make them tasty things for your father as he loves. And you will make come to your father, and he will eat so that he will bless you before the face of his death. And Jacob said toward Rebekah, his mother, look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I will be in his eyes as a mocker, and I make a curse come upon me and not a blessing. And his mother said to him, upon me may your curse be, my son. Only hearken with my voice and walk and take for me. And he walked and took and had come to his mother. And his mother made tasty things as his father loved. And Rebekah took the clothing of Esau, her son, the large one, the desirable ones that were with her in the house, and dressed Jacob, her son, the small one. And the skins of the kids of the goats she made dress upon his hands and on the smooth of his neck, and she gave the tasty things and the bread that had done in the hands of Jacob, her son. And he came toward his father, and he said, my father. And he said, look, it's me. Who are you, my son? And Jacob said toward his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. I've done as you've spoken toward me. Rise, please, sit and eat of my hunting so that your life breath can bless me. And Isaac said toward his son, what is this that you've hurried to find, my son? And he said, that which Jehovah your Elohim has made meet before my face. And Isaac said toward Jacob, draw near, please, that I may feel you, my son, whether you are he, my son Esau, or not. And Jacob drew near toward Isaac, his father, and he felt him and said, the voice is the voice of Jacob, and the hands are the hands of Esau. And he did not recognize him, for his hands, as the hands of Esau, his brother, were hairy. And he blessed him and said, you are this one, my son Esau. And he said, I am. And he said, make it draw near to me, and I will eat of the hunting of my son, so that my life breath may bless you. And he caused it to draw near to him, and he ate, and he caused wine to come to him, and he drank. And Isaac, his father, said toward him, draw near, please, and kiss me, my son. And he drew near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his clothing, and he blessed him and said, see, the smell of my son as the smell of a field which Jehovah has blessed, and may the Elohim give to you from the dew of the skies and from the fatness of the land and an abundance of grain and new wine. Let people serve you and nations bow themselves down to you. You be a mighty one to your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow themselves down to you. The ones cursing you are being cursed, and the ones blessing you are being blessed. And it was, as soon as Isaac finished the blessing of Jacob, and it was Jacob only going out, surely he had only gone out from the face of Isaac, his father, that Esau, his brother, came from his hunting. He also made tasty things and caused it to come to his father and said to his father, let my father arise and eat from the hunting of his son so that your life breath may bless me. And Isaac, his father, said to him, who are you? And he said, I'm your son, your firstborn, Esau. Isaac trembled, a large trembling, even exceedingly, and said, who then is he, the one who hunts hunting? And he caused it to come to me, and I ate of all before you came, and I blessed him. Also, blessed he will be. As Esau heard the spoken things of his father, and he cried out with a cry, large and bitter, even exceedingly. And he said to his father, bless me also, my father. And he said, your brother has come with cunning, and he's taken your blessing. And he said, is it because he called his name Jacob? He took me by my heel this two times. My firstborn right he took. And look, now he's taken my blessing. He also said, have you not put aside a blessing for me? And Isaac answered and said to Esau, look, as a mighty one, I've placed him over you. And all his brothers have I given him for servants. And with grain and new wine, I've sustained him. And for you then, what will I do, my son? And Esau said to his father, one blessing there is to you, my father. Bless me, also me, my father. And Esau lifted his voice and wept. And Isaac, his father, answered and said toward him, look, from the fats of the land will be your sitting, and from the dew of the skies from above, and by your sword you will live, and your brother will you serve. And it will be, as you've been caused to wander, you will tear off his yoke from upon your neck. And Esau resented Jacob because of the blessing with which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning my father come near, and I'll kill Jacob, my brother. And they were told to Rebekah the spoken things of Esau, her son, the large one. And she sent and called to Jacob, her son, the small one, and said toward him, look, Esau, your brother is being consoled in regard to you to kill you. And now, my son, hearken with my voice and rise, flee for yourself toward Laban, my brother, toward Haran, and sit with him single days until the heat of your brother returns, until the flared nose, very literal, of your brother returns from you. You know how you get mad and you just, your nostrils flare. All right. I love the literal Hebrew. And he has forgotten that which you've done to him, and I will send and take you from there. Why should I become childless also of two of you in one day? And Rebekah said toward Isaac, I feel disgust with my life from the face of the daughters of Het. If Jacob take a woman of the daughters of Het as these from the daughters of the land, why to me is life? And Isaac called toward Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, you will not take a woman from the daughters of Canaan. Rise, walk toward Padan Aram, toward the house of Betuel, the father of your mother, and take for yourself from there a woman of the daughters of Laban, the brother of your mother. And El Shaddai will bless you and cause you to bear fruit and cause you to be abundant, and you will be for an assembly of peoples. And he will give to you the blessing of Abraham, to you and to your seed with you, for your possessing the land of your sojournings, which Elohim gave to Abraham. And Isaac sent away Jacob, and he walked toward Padan Aram, toward Laban, son of Betuel the Aramean, brother of Rebekah, mother of Jacob and Esau. And Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and had sent him toward Padan Aram to take for himself from there a woman. In his blessing him and laid charge upon him, saying, you will not take a woman from the daughters of Canaan. And Jacob hearkened toward his father and toward his mother and walked toward Padan Aram. Esau saw that bad were the daughters of Canaan in the eyes of Isaac, his father. And Esau walked toward Ishmael and took Mahalat, the daughter of Ishmael, the son of Abraham, sister of Nebaiot, upon his women for himself for a woman. Long reading. Hey, you know what I don't get? I mean, this isn't just reading it. So the whole story, the narrative takes place, and this thing goes on, and Jacob and, Isaac and Esau are both devastated by this. And it's like, it seems, according to the story, that Rebecca just walks in. She's like, "Hey, honey, I wanted to talk to you about something. I don't want Isaac to take a woman." And you would think he would go, Jacob, I'm getting my patriarchs confused. Jacob, speaking of Jacob, you're not going to believe what he just did. None of that. He's like, "Yeah, bring him in. I'll bless him." But anyway, there's probably some time here, and I'll get into that a little bit. But it is a very, very edge-of-the-seat story. You almost need different voices to read this. Like, we should have acted it out as a play. That's really the best way to do it. Because you could have a woman, you know, you could come in, Kathleen, you could do this, or somebody, and go, "Look, I just heard your dad talking," and you know, you could picture the parts being played out. When it's all one guy's voice, it doesn't give it the, you know, because you need somebody to sound like Jacob and Esau. But beneath the surface, don't forget this. The elder will serve the younger. This word came to Rebecca while she was pregnant. She wasn't letting go. We think of Yaakov, the one who grabbed the heel, as one who grabs hold of something and won't let it go. He gets that straight up from his mama. Because she knows that God told her this, and she is not letting go of it. Now, again, I want to remind you that both of these children are hers. Those of us who are parents know that we love all of our children. So it's not a matter of her not loving Esau, but she's got a word from God about Jacob. And it's going to happen. She knows it's going to happen. It's going to happen by God, no matter what she has to do to bring it about. Look at Malachi. Malachi chapter 1. And verses 1 and a few verses down. "The oracle of the word of Jehovah to Israel by Malachi, my messenger." Now, I don't know that this is the prophet's name. It seems more accurate to think of it in terms of a messenger. But it's through a messenger. Now, notice verse 2. "I have loved you, says Jehovah, but you say, how have you loved us? Is not Esau Jacob's brother, saith Jehovah? Yet I've loved Jacob, but I've hated Esau. I've laid waste his hill country and left his heritage to jackals of the desert." Then it goes on, and I just wanted to pick that up because it's powerful. Look, Jacob, Jehovah loves. Esau, Edom, he hates. Now, we tend to think, well, God loves everyone, and no, he doesn't. I'm sorry to break this to you. I'm sorry to ruin your morning. But that idea does not find merit in Scripture. Now, some might say, well, the word hate there doesn't really mean hate. Yes, it does. Look it up. It's in a dictionary. It's clearly the idea of hatred. That's what it means. And people try to explain it away, and they talk about, well, it's comparative, it's something like that, you know. But it's pretty strong when you think about it. So we have to ask the question. That's okay. We have to ask the question, is there injustice on God's part? Because we're going to hold him like we're going to judge God. This is the way we think about this. So what we want to do is we want to make it make sense for us. So we either change the translation or we Look, here's what the Bible says, and it generally means what it says. Now, we can try to work around that, but who are we to say? I mean, doesn't God tell Moses, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy? If you were making a clay pot, someone once said, and you fashioned one for a cooking vessel, and you fashioned another to put trash or waste in, should the one, you know the story, should this one say, why did you make me like that? The maker can do whatever he wants. All right. So this idea is also right under the surface. Now, don't read too much into that, but I want you to think about it. Upon reading the story, we might feel sorry for Esau. I mean, in some ways I do. It tugs at my heart when I picture him, and I know this isn't right, but I read the Bible a lot as you do, and so I can almost picture Esau walking in, and I'm sorry, but I always do this. He walks in, and he's like, hey, look, Dad, I got your food. And he's like, what? Who is it? You know, because he's thinking, oh, my God. Well, who was that that just... So he's like this... He's always caught off guard. Esau is just dull. He's just a day late and a dollar short. He's always pushes it to the limit. He stays in the woods too long till he'd eat his arm off. He's so hungry. And he puts him in a bind, or he's slow getting the... He just can't outwit Jacob. And some people think badly about Jacob when you read this. And I have to admit, I see Jacob as a trickster. He's smooth. He says, I'm smooth. Boy, he's smooth like he doesn't have all the hair that his brother has. But he's smooth in more ways than one, I'll tell you. He's slick. He's fast. He's quick thinker. He's concerned, though. Remember, you know, when his mom tells him this plan, he said, you know, Mom, I just don't know. How are we going to pull this off? I think they were probably a pretty good team in other stories that we don't have. But he's like, how are we going to pull this off? You know, Esau's pretty hairy, and I'm kind of smooth. And she's like, I got this. Don't worry about it. But the story hinges on something that I pointed out before I read it. Remember, the birthright has already been passed to Jacob. So technically, he should be the one to get the blessing. Now, does Isaac know that Jacob has the birthright now? We don't know. According to the story, we don't know that. So I'm not trying to make an excuse. I mean, look, I'm an advocate of Israel. I'm a Zionist. And a lot of people accuse me of making excuses even for bad behavior of modern Israel. So they would say, well, I would expect you to cover for Jacob in this story because you do it all the time in modern day. But I don't do that, really. I don't criticize that which is good intentionally, nor do I... hold in high regard things that are bad, even if a good person does it. So I will say that Jacob's way of doing this on the surface seems a little bit, crooked or underhanded or sneaky. But hey, it's got to happen, right? So it's a nail biter. The story today is a nail biter. Isaac is old and blind. What does the Torah say about tricking blind people, by the way? Later in the Holiness Code in Leviticus 19:14, I'm just going to read a couple of verses. You shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall fear your God. I am Jehovah. Now, the rabbis rightly think about this in more than literal terms. Literally, if someone is deaf and you're behind their back and you're talking about them where they can't hear you, is that right? Mm-hmm. No, it's not right. It's not. Now, let me tell you this. It's not right to talk behind someone's back when they can't hear you, whether they're deaf or not.
Right.
See the principle? In other words, be a man or a woman. If you have something to say, say it to someone kindly, but don't ever do that. You know, I tell my kids this, you know, don't talk behind people's back. It's a really, really bad thing. People's reputations are hurt. You know, kids do this, but guess what? Grown-ups do it too. So don't do that. And now, what about the blind part? See, Isaac is blind. It says not to trip the blind. Literally, like, you know, some people will talk about some of the commandments aren't for the non-Jew. And if you're not Jewish, you only have to keep these few. Look, there are principles that are important. If I'm not Jewish, you know, some people say, well, I'm Israelite, I'm this, I'm that. But if I say I'm not Jewish, there are people who would tell me this commandment doesn't apply to me. Are you crazy? You telling me that I could say, hey, Sherry, you want to have some fun? Let's go out and find some blind people and trip them. It's not against our rules. We can do it because it's not a command. I mean, come on, don't be stupid. So this commandment, though, has another application beyond the literal. Don't put things in front of people, not even physical, that will cause them to stumble, you know? So think about it that way. But there are passages, there are other passages. Just one more. Look at Deuteronomy 27. This is in the curses, by the way. You want to bring a curse on you? Here you go. Deuteronomy 27, if I can get there. And just look at verse 16. Cursed be he who dishonors his father or his mother. Now, dishonor. Now, by the way, the word honor in Hebrew is a lot of times give weight to their words, consider. Now, the reason I included this one is because it leads to something else. And I want you to think, did Jacob maybe push the envelope a little bit on these? Cursed be anyone who dishonors his father or his mother, and all the people shall say, amen. Cursed be he who removes his neighbor's landmark, and all the people shall say, amen. Cursed be he who misleads a blind man on the road, and all the people shall say, amen. Tricking a blind person is something which will bring a curse on you. Because they don't have the sight to see, and people might use that as their advantage and to the blind person's disadvantage. In this case, in our story today, Isaac is literally dim of seeing. I don't know if he's fully blind, but he certainly is blind enough, and I think he is blind. In other words, he can't. He says, come near so I can smell you. He's relying on touch. So his eyes are dim generally means it's like you turn the light out. That's the way they would describe it in the ancient times. It's just dark. His eyes are dark. The story begins, Isaac is old and blind, and you get the impression that he's on his deathbed. And I want you to think about something. So we're in Genesis 27. A lot has to happen over the next 8 chapters. You know, we don't read about Isaac's death until chapter 35. Now, either Isaac is on his deathbed for a long, long, long time, and he says, I don't know how much longer I have to live. I have to be honest. When I look at the Bible, a lot of people get nervous because I'm not traditional in my thinking. But it helps me sometimes when I think about things and just say it out. You ever meet somebody that's like, this might be it. I think I'm dying. Like I just looked at WebMD and, you know, I'm going down. I got all the symptoms. This is real. I don't know how much longer. I don't know that that's what he's doing. But it could be he's bedridden because he can't see. You know, I don't know. But you get the impression reading the story, he's on deathbed. I don't know how many days I have left. Go get me something to eat so I can bless you before I die. Let me tell you a few things that happened between this story and when he actually dies. Jacob leaves. He marries two women, takes in their handmaids, has at least 12 boys and some girls. We know of Dina. We don't know how many others, but he doesn't just go get married, get a big family, and come back home. He spends years away in Paddan Aram. And Isaac is steady just living on. I don't know how many times he said, would you go get me a meal? I feel like this, you know, I don't know. We don't know. But here's the point. You don't know your days. Isaac doesn't, and we don't either. You know, we hope to all live to be. In fact, Isaac is he lives to be the oldest. Maybe there's something about that. Maybe the complaining gets in there. But he makes it to 180. I don't know how old he is in this story, but you have to assume he's 60 when the twins are born. So, you know, I'm assuming that the boys are in their 20s. I don't know. Maybe there's someone can figure this out from the text. I mean, I have this great chart Peggy sent me. I need to go look and see if it tells me how old they are. But anyway, their marriage age, they can procreate and so forth. But the point is, we don't know our days. He didn't know, and we don't either. Jacob, here's the key in the story. Jacob does have every intention of passing the blessing on to Esau. He's not worried about it. He has no other thought crosses his mind. He just simply wants to pass it on. And so that's what's going on there. Rivka hears it. She hears of this plot. And she hears that he said, go get me some food and I'll give you the blessing. She jumps right into action. Swift and determined action because of this word that she has, the elder will serve the younger. Jacob is concerned. I'm just going to hit a few high points and make a few closing comments. Jacob is concerned that he'll be considered a mocker. And then Rivka agrees to take the curse if one is handed out. Now, I want to talk to you a minute about the plan and how the plan is put together by Mom and Jacob. It involves clothing. It involves clothing and skins to deceive. There's something about clothing and a dead animal that are used to trick. It brings about the blessing, but think about that. Because this is going to come back on Jacob to haunt him. You know, when Jacob, when he goes before Pharaoh, way later we'll talk about this and make a big deal out of it, he says, few and bad are the days of my life. Few and bad. Now, when you think about that, he's got a lot of learning to do. But he brings it on himself. He will literally reap what he sows. God will not be mocked. See, we talk in here, Jacob is concerned that he will be a mocker. Well, we know that God won't be mocked, so we'll see that even in the execution of God's work, we're held to a high standard. And so I want you to at least consider that he will benefit from many things, but he'll also pay the price for some of his actions, let's say. Three times in the story, Isaac gives him an opportunity to say, is it you? He asks him three times, basically, are you sure this is Esau? Come here, let me touch you, let me smell you. Your voice, remember he says, the voice is the voice of Jacob. So he didn't disguise his voice, or he didn't do it well. But the hands are the hands of Esau. Now, I don't want to really go into this thought so much right now, because I do have some ideas that are beginning to grow in my mind, but I'm thinking way later. Are there those presently who have the voice of Jacob but the hands of Esau. I'm working on a book project now, and I'm almost thinking that this could be a chapter, because there are some who are, you flip the story. Instead of Jacob being dressed as Esau, Esau is somewhat, it's like a wolf in sheep's clothing kind of thing going on in my mind. But I want you to recognize that when Jacob receives the blessing, he looks like Esau. He smells like Esau. There's something to that. Some of you might be able to help me with that. Email me whatever it is I'm trying to figure out. Maybe you can help me. But Isaac is fooled by the feel. Again, this is something that's pretty important. I think about a lot. Don't get caught up in the touch, you know, in terms of spiritual blessing. Don't get hooked on that feeling, you know, that feeling, because it's important, but it's not something we should make a decision based on, because it can trick you. Things aren't always what they seemed. In our story, exit stage left, enter stage right. Is that mine? I don't know whose it is. Exit stage left, enter stage right. You have Jacob going off camera, Esau coming in. I picture this as they almost pass in the hall of the house. Like, hey, Esau, how you doing? Hey, Jacob. Why you got that hair stuff on the back of your neck? You know, it's like, why are you dressed like me? It's almost that close, because it gives you the impression as soon as he walked out, or maybe they didn't. I guess they probably didn't see one another, but it's like out comes one, in comes the other. You picture Isaac in bed going, man, that was good. And then the story kicks off. The plot is discovered. Now, here's something that happens. When the plot is discovered, in Hebrew, both Isaac and Esau, a certain description is used of them. It's ad me'od, until exceedingly. It's a way in Hebrew to say very, very. Remember, it says that Isaac trembled, ad me'od. He's literally shaking in the bed. He's so shook over this, physically shaking. And then it says that Esau cries, ad me'od, like snot coming out, kind of crying, like really, really devastated over, oh, my, it's real bad. I mean, he's really, really, really crying. Isaac says, he took your blessing. Notice the word took. He took your blessing. And then Esau says, rightly, he's called Yaakov. He supplanted me these two times. He took, see, the word took is always ascribed to Jacob when others are talking about him and his actions. He took my birthright. He took the blessing. And Rivka overhears this conversation, and she hears that Esau is going to kill Jacob. So she hatches this plot. Again, like I said, I find it interesting that she says, hey, Jacob, I mean, hey, Isaac, we don't want Jacob to take one of these women. And I just almost picture it happening, you know, right after. So I need to dig into that a little bit, because I don't know. But they're not Israelites yet, but these Hebrew women are very strong. So she might have just told him, if he said anything, okay, I hear you going on and on about this. Okay, so Jacob, Esau, they're both our kids. Look, I don't want them to marry women locally. And he would have probably been like, okay, dear, well, bring him in and I'll bless him. That's kind of the way we read it. Presently, we're dealing with two men, Jacob and Esau, but they represent two nations, two kingdoms, two peoples. The character of these two people will play out in their descendants. The Bible tells us that the birthright and the blessing had to go to Jacob. Okay? We also learn in Jacob's life that through his suffering and through his trials and tribulations, he will be crafted into the person that he is supposed to become. He'll pay doubly for his sins, I assure you. He will pay plenty for his mistakes. But in the end, he'll turn out just as it was purposed. He always had something in him, both of them did, that show up in the lives of their descendants. Again, think of them as real people, but also think of them as nations. In Genesis 25, 27, we read about Jacob and Esau, one being hairy, man of the field, and so forth, and he has the taste of game in his mouth. And then we read that Jacob is a man, Ishtam, a complete man. Josephus says this about the Edomites. You know, Josephus is the first century historian. This is what he says about the descendants of Esau. A turbulent and unruly race, always hovering on the verge of revolution, rushing to battle as if going to a feast. I think that's interesting. Think about that. And boys are always hungry. I mean, really. The first time we meet him, he's talking about gluttony. And years later, in the time of Josephus, in the first century, he's saying, let me describe this group. They're like always on the verge of a revolution. It's always extreme with these people. A couple of things I wanted to cover in closing. The eternal lesson is learn to do good. Learn to do good. Refuse to do the bad. Go with me to Micah. I want to cover about three prophetic passages and how this goes together. In Micah chapter 6. And just begin in verse 1. Hear what Jehovah says. Arise, plead your case before the mountains. Let the hills hear your voice. Hear, you mountains, the controversy of Jehovah. Remember this word, controversy. And you enduring foundations of the earth, for Jehovah has a controversy with his people. With his people. And he will contend with Israel. Now, it's important that we learn what this controversy is. Because if it hadn't been resolved yet, maybe we ought to be working on it, okay? Oh, my people, what have I done to you? In what way have I wearied you? Answer me. For I brought you up from the land of Egypt, redeemed you from the house of bondage. I sent before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Oh, my people, remember what Balak, king of Moab, devised and what Bilam, the son of Beor, answered him. Now, this is going to be a point. I'm going to bring it together. Remember, I'm talking about a controversy. I'm talking about Balaam, as some people would say. And what happened from Shittim to Gilgal. What is that? That you may know the righteousness is of Jehovah. Now, with what shall I come before Jehovah and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will Jehovah be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He showed you, O man, what is good, and what does Jehovah require of you? But to do justice, to love loving kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Now, break that down a little bit. Jacob is going to learn in his journey through life. His descendants will as well. Notice that it talks about, he wants us to focus on what happened from Shittim to Gilgal. so that you'll know the righteousnesses of Jehovah. What happened from Shittim to Gilgal? Just, I'm not going to go into the details, but here are the verses. Numbers chapter 25, 1, Joshua chapter 2, verse 1, and Joshua 3, verse 1 mention Shittim as a place. Those are the only three. Elsewhere, Shittim represents the wood, acacia wood. But Shittim is a place, and it's a stop. This is talking about, focus on this. From the last place you camped outside the land until you get to the first place inside the land, Gilgal, right? That area right there, the crossing, he wants us to focus on that, which we'll do at another point in our progressive story. But you guys can start thinking about that. Now, he goes into this other state where he says, what is good? What is good? He's told you what is good. Now, we've got to tie in controversy, Bilam, what is good. Now, look with me to Numbers chapter 24, verse 5, because we're looking at Bilam, right? It just said, look at Bilam. Remember what Bilam said? Now, in Hebrew, Numbers 24, 5, Matovu ohaleka Yaakov mishkanoteka Yisrael. How goodly, how good. You know what it says in Hebrew? Matov. He's told you what's good. What is good? How good are your tents, O Jacob? Your dwellings, O Israel. Bilam looked out and he saw the entire camp of Israel dwelling together in unity, and this pagan prophet said, that's good, to dwell together in unity. Now, Matov is mentioned one other place. Some of you know this already. Psalm 133. In Psalm 133, this is one of the Psalms of Ascent. Behold, how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity. Our story is not about brothers dwelling in unity, is it? It's like the precious oil upon the head running down upon the beard of Aaron running down on the collar of his robes. It's like the dew of Hermon, which falls on the mountains of Zion. For there Jehovah has commanded the blessing, life forevermore. The idea is that what is good, the eternal lesson, is to seek to do the good. Now, we might judge these stories and sometimes suggest that what we read was not good. But behind the stories, events are seemingly being guided by an unseen hand. Almost as if the things that happen are decreed to happen and they're going to happen the way they're supposed to happen. You remember when the servant is sent to retrieve a woman for Isaac? He says this in Hebrew. He says, Hakrena lifnai hayom. Please make something happen before my face today. And God does. He picks the right woman for Isaac, and she agrees to go. You know the whole story, but because of the faithfulness of this servant who says, make something happen, this is a clue for us. When we see this root word that's translated hakrena, it comes out, it means to make something happen. When we see this, it's the unseen hand. One more example. When Jacob comes into his father with the food, Isaac goes, how'd you get here so quick, Esau? And Esau says, in Jacob's voice, God made something happen for my face today. Same Hebrew words. Doesn't come across in the translation, but he says, God's doing a work here. That's how I got back so quick. And I can almost picture Rebecca watching from outside the room, the whole thing, thinking, I hope he doesn't mess this up, you know? All right. The plan is carried forward both in ancient times as well as modern times when Jehovah makes something happen. We have to be careful when we judge how that comes to pass, because quite often we might think that's not right, that's not the way it would happen, but God honors it. If he's behind it and he inspires these plans, for all we know, he could have inspired Rebecca. We know that he speaks to her. And he spoke to her when he wasn't speaking to Isaac as well. So think about those things. In this story, it apparently was Rebecca who was to determine to ensure that the blessing passed to the younger instead of the older, as one might expect. Shabbat shalom.